The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 14th Chapter, text number 17, given by His Divine Grace, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev, recorded on March 1st, 1983, at Sri Sri Radhakalachanji Dham in Dallas, Texas.
Esha teham vidashyami priham viruyad ichasi tasya kamannaka kurya siddhistrai vargikiyataha Esha this te your request Aham, I, Vidashyami, shall execute. Priham, very dear. Biru, O afflicted one. Yat, what? Ichasi, you are desiring. Tasyaha, her. Kaman, desires. Na, not. Kaha, who? Kuryat, would perform. Siddhi, perfection of liberation. Traivargiki, three. Yataha, from whom? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O afflicted one, I shall forthwith gratify whatever desire is dear to you. For who else but you is the source of the three perfections of liberation? Purport. The three perfections of liberation are religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. For a conditioned soul, the wife is considered to be the source of liberation because she offers her service to the husband for his ultimate liberation. Conditional material existence is based on sense gratification. And if someone has the good fortune to get a good wife, he is helped by the wife in all respects. If one is disturbed in his conditional life, he becomes more and more entangled in material contamination. A faithful wife is supposed to cooperate with her husband in fulfilling all material desires so that he can then become comfortable and execute spiritual activities for the perfection of life. If, however, the husband is progressive in spiritual advancement, the wife undoubtedly shares in his activities, and thus both the wife and the husband profit in spiritual perfection. It is essential, therefore, that girls as well as boys be trained to discharge spiritual duties so that at the time of cooperation, both will be benefited. The training of the boy is brahmacharya, and the training of the girl is chastity. A faithful wife and spiritually trained brahmachari are a good combination for advancement of the human mission.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Sadasati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunnavadi Paskata Deshatarane. When Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he had expected to make sannyasis and brahmacharis. Because traditionally, that is the business of the sannyasis, to create more sannyasis and brahmacharis. And in India, so far as the ashram of the guru is concerned, Generally, there were only men living there, especially sannyasis and brahmacharis. So Prabhupada had in his mind that he would be creating a similar situation when he came to America. But on coming here, he found a very different set of circumstances on account of Western society, namely that the women were enjoying equal freedom as the men. Traditionally, in the Vedic culture, the women were always given shelter and protection, either by their fathers, by their husbands, or by their elder sons. But in America, on account of the absence of such Vedic social structure, the women were practically on an equal par with the men in terms of all of their activities. So when Prabhupada began to preach, naturally, women also came forward and requested that we also want to join your mission. So the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Lord Krishna, who is the most liberal personality. People are very proud to be champion some liberal movement. But Lord Krishna shows in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the greatest libertarian, because he declares, "Striya vaishastata sudras tepiyanti param gatim." Whether one may be a woman, a merchant, or a shudra, it does not matter, because he can attain the highest perfection, Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, based upon the principles of Bhagavad Gita, that we are not this body, that we are pure spirit soul, he welcomed all people to join his mission, both men and women. And practically, that is, of course, supported by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also gave many women initiation. So there was no bar in this regard. Prabhupada was not breaking with any type of system of the Vedic culture, but it was an adjustment to accommodate the time, the place, and circumstances. So, the Vedic system of marriage is described here, varnashram, that one is first of all trained as a brahmachari, or we say brahmacharini, means the girls before they are married. And that training is celibacy. That is the most important feature of the training of a brahmachari, is celibacy, that he can learn to control this sex urge, because sex is the most, it can be the most degrading factor for the human being, because through illicit connection, all types of sinful activities are gradually taken up by the conditioned soul. So unless one can control this sex life, there's no question of progressive spiritual life. So brahmachari means celibacy. Brahmachari guru kule vashandanto guru arhitan. One should live at the home of the guru and should learn to become the humble servant of the spiritual master. Just like here, the brahmacharis in our guru kule, they are rendering some menial service to the spiritual master. But that's proper. Tadvini paniprathena pariprashnena sevaya. This is the way for attaining knowledge. When the spiritual master becomes pleased with the faithful, submissive service of the student, he blesses the student with transcendental knowledge and realization. So the brahmachari should cultivate loving friendship with the spiritual master and serve him like a menial servant. These are the proper activities. And the girls also must learn to be shy and chaste. And that will automatically happen, providing they are given proper shelter and protection by their elders. So there shouldn't be free mixing, illicit mixing. And, of course, both boys and girls should be trained to love Lord Sri Krishna as the only goal within their lives. Krishna should be worshipped at every moment. This is the training which they have to receive. It doesn't matter what the subject matter should be, but it should be centered upon Krishna, because we are not interested in anything other than Krishna. We may become well-versed in so many different fields of knowledge, but always there should be some connection with Krishna, because this is the hankering of the soul. The mind, the body may have so many different desires, so many different interests. But so far as the soul is concerned, its only interest is, as part and parcel of the Lord, to be reconnected with the Lord. So this is the real satisfaction of the soul. This is service to the soul. This is the service to mankind. Service to mankind is not so first class when it is simply on the platform of the body. Now, nowadays, people are praised for doing great welfare work. Just like recently, one lady in India, a Christian missionary, so she was given the Nobel Prize for her peace-loving activities of social welfare. But although that may be very great from the material point of view, and no doubt she is a great selfless soul working for the social well-being of the physical well-being of so many persons, that ultimately the highest welfare work is to help the soul to achieve its true desire and need to be reconnected with Krishna. So our educational process is only for that purpose. If one does not know Krishna, then he is in complete ignorance, no matter how big his knowledge may seem. And if one knows Krishna, even though such a person may be illiterate, it doesn't matter, he's the most learned personality of all. Just like Gorkhasur Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he could not even write his own name. And yet, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta accepted him as his eternal spiritual master, and he received from him knowledge of Krishna. That means that one who knows Krishna knows everything. And one who is without knowledge of Krishna is simply in blind ignorance. So, now if a brahmachari is properly trained, then according to his either more or less conditioned nature, he may prefer to remain a brahmachari, or later on in life, he may decide that he needs to take a wife. It is a question of conditioning. Actually, the soul doesn't require such an encumbrance as the entanglement of wife and family, etc. But because we are not at the level yet of understanding ourselves as pure spirit souls, eternal servants of Krishna, in our conditioned understanding we may think, no, I shall be benefited by getting a wife because I am agitated by sex life. That means that sex agitation is there so long as one is conditioned. So according to the amount of conditioning, one is more or less sexually disturbed. The more advanced one is, the less sex life will be a disturbance. And the less advanced we are, the more we feel we need it. So the Vedic culture is very practical, because it is not simply the exclusive activity for liberated souls. Krishna consciousness is meant to benefit the whole world. So it's to be understood that not everyone is on the same level. So if one is feeling disturbed too much by sex desire, then he's permitted to marry a nice Krishna conscious wife and execute Grihastha ashram. But as Srila Prabhupada points out, the proper formula should be a well-trained brahmachari and a chaste woman. So if someone is not properly trained as a brahmachari, then it is to be understood that his grihastha ashram will be a failure. In other words, one should be seen to be properly fixed up before getting married. It is not that because someone is having so many difficulties and cannot control himself, therefore he should be married. Because unless he has learned to control himself, then how will he be able to give spiritual guidance to his wife and children? So it is the duty of the elder members of this movement to see that before they permit somebody, a brahmachari, getting himself married, that he should be properly trained. Then there's no objection. And the woman also should be chaste. If a wife is not chaste, then there's all disturbance within family life. So that chastity of the girl is learned by serving her father, serving her spiritual master, serving Lord Krishna. If the girl is simply trained in this way to serve Krishna very nicely, then she will be perfectly chaste. Then the marriage will be successful. So successful marriage depends that the husband and wife shall very nicely execute religious duties. Here in this verse, you will find that Prabhupada is explaining that the business of the wife is to satisfy the desire for sense gratification on the part of the husband. This statement, however, should not be misunderstood, especially in the context of this story. Because as this narration unfolds, we will find that this husband made a great mistake because his wife was agitating him for sense gratification irreligiously. So if the husband or the wife cooperate with the other partner on an irreligious ground, then the marriage becomes very much entangled. So this statement by Prabhupada should be properly understood when it says that the duty of the wife is to fulfill the material desires of the husband. Those material desires have to be regulated. In other words, sex life is a material desire, but if it is properly regulated according to religious principles, that sex life becomes spiritually progressive. So in so many ways, a man may have material desires, just like a man may desire to eat palatable foodstuffs. So if his wife cooks very nicely and offers the foodstuffs to Krishna and then gives the prasadam to her husband, in that way she satisfies his material desires and yet cooperates with him for a spiritual progressive life. So in every case, there are purifying methods for satisfying sense gratification. Husband and wife should not cooperate together simply for gross, mundane sense gratification. Then they are not grihastha, they're called grihamedi. A grihamedi is one who satisfies his partner, his husband, or his wife, for mundane sense gratification without any restriction according to scripture. So this grihamedi life is degrading. The grihamedi is forced to take his birth or her birth again within this material world as a human being or lower. It is only in the grihastha ashram, which is a place of spiritual awakening, that the husband and wife have the possibility of going back to Godhead. So the method of Krishna consciousness is not to frustrate the material desires, but to purify them. Therefore, marriage is a facility. It is a facility for gradual upliftment. The householder community should cooperate nicely, both on the family level and interacting on the temple level, to see that this happens. We should not misunderstand, as I said the other day, that now I am married, I no longer am under the charge of my spiritual master. Sometimes people think like this. But there is a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't exactly remember the place, but there's a verse, I think, in the seventh canto it is, where it states that the householder couple is as much under the guidelines of the spiritual master as when they were single, as a brahmacharini or unmarried girl. It is not that now that I have gotten married, I have freed myself from any obligation to my spiritual master. Sometimes devotees think like that. But that is not actually the statement of scripture. Because how can I free myself from the guideline of my spiritual master? One who frees himself from the charge of his spiritual master, it is like committing suicide. His spiritual whereabouts become unknown. Just like the astronauts, they say that they are walking. So there is some connection between themselves and the spaceship. If they lose that connection, then supposing they're in outer space, and they lose the connection, then they fly off into outer space to only, you know, who can say where. So in the same way, when one starts to lose connection with the spiritual master, the result is that he begins to orbit into outer space, and his spiritual whereabouts become unknown. We do not know where that soul is any longer. We can see the material body, but so far the soul goes, we do not know where that soul is going. So, it is a facility. Householder life is a great benefit. And then again, it can become a deep, dark well if one is not very careful. Just like a well has got great benefit. From a well, you can draw water, and water can sustain life. But at the same time, if you're not careful, you can fall into the well and drown, crack your head and drown. So we have to know how to take the benefit of the water out of the well and not get pulled into the well. So the householders should be very much careful that they always follow the instructions of the spiritual master and the guidelines of scripture and the advice of saintly persons who are progressive in their devotional lives. Then householder life is first class. Prabhupada encouraged the devotees to get married when he saw that they were sexually agitated. He did not try to frustrate them. He encouraged them. He was very hopeful. He became a little bit despondent, however, later on, because he saw that the householders were constantly falling down. So this was a cause of despondency, and therefore Prabhupada stopped performing marriages. He stopped performing them, and he stopped involving himself, because he saw that the boys and girls could not control themselves properly. So he became a little bit despondent about this. So now our movement is getting stronger, and therefore this strength should give more support to the householders, that they should fare a little bit better than the previous generation. They should remain together and never think of divorce. They should always cooperate and follow carefully the instructions of the spiritual master. This will ensure their steady progress. So, of course, we should not become sidetracked by this. In other words, these types of considerations are ultimately not the final goal. When it says here there are three perfections of liberation, we have to distinguish what liberation is as opposed to pure love of God. In other words, there is a distinction made between mukti and bhakti. Mukti and bhakti are not the same. So there are four principles: dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma means religious, ritualistic performances. Artha means economic development. Kama means sense gratification. And moksha means liberation. But bhakti is the fifth principle, which is beyond these four. So the Vedic literatures deal in great length on dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And this householder ashram is part of this system of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. But the principle of bhakti is a transcendental process, and it is coming about by a different method. In other words, one's varna or ashram is only important insofar as it is a preparation for actually cultivating love of God. Neither one's ashram nor one's varna can deliver one love of God. Love of God is delivered by the spiritual master. Love of God is delivered through devotional service unto Krishna. So the proper arrangement of varna and ashram is for the structuring of a society so that the principle of bhakti can actually be coming out and executed. Therefore, the statement is there in the Bhagavatam that no matter how perfectly one may execute the varna and ashram obligations, if bhakti is not developed, the whole thing was a waste of time. So this point has to be seen, that bhakti is actually the goal. As far as bhakti goes, we have to see how much one is actually rendering service unto Krishna. Therefore, Krishna has to be the center of the varna and ashram system. When Krishna is the center, that means that we have to learn selfless love unto Krishna. So that most selfless love was exhibited by the gopis, the topmost devotees of the Lord, as well as by all of the other residents of Krishna's abode, Vrindavan. When Krishna was present in Vrindavan, all of the residents there were infused with this mood of bhakti. And that means that they were so selfless in their mood that they put Krishna before everything else. So our Krishna consciousness movement takes regard for varna and ashram. That means that we are recognizing the need for different divisions, just like brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasi. And similarly, we recognize that different people have different types of service tendencies in the form of intellectual, administrative, agricultural, or mercantile, and labor. So according to one's nature and one's work, he's positioned in such a way within this varna and ashram institution. But the basis of everything is Krishna bhakti. In other words, Krishna is the actual goal within this movement. Krishna is present. And how far one is advanced is to be understood by how much service, qualitatively and quantitatively, one does for Lord Krishna. If the service is negligible, then it means that somehow there is a failure within a person's nature. Something is not correct. Some mentality is incorrect. Something is wrong. Maybe the ashram is wrong. Maybe the mind is wrong. But there's some defect. Because this is the business of life, to love and serve Krishna. So the residents of Vrindavan, they were on this platform, just like Srimati Radharani. So Krishna's feelings for Radharani are greater than his feelings for any other gopi. But Radharani's feelings for Krishna are so pure that sometimes if Krishna sees a very attractive gopi and wants to enjoy with this gopi, Srimati Radharani will beg this gopi to please come and be with Krishna. In other words, her love is so much that even though she wants to be with Krishna, her real interest is Krishna's happiness. So we have to learn this type of mood. Now we are on the platform of always considering our own happiness. Sometimes we're always thinking, what will make me happy? But try to appreciate Radharani's happiness. There is a very nice example given in the Puranas of one Brahmin family. So the man, the husband, he was the fallen son of a Brahmin. And he had gotten leprosy. So his wife was very, very chaste and faithful to him. And she was so faithful that because she knew her husband's desire, she was always trying to fulfill it. So her husband, although he was a leper, there is a very nice example given in the Puranas of one Brahmin family. So the man, the husband, he was the fallen son of a Brahmin, and he had gotten leprosy. So his wife was very, very chaste and faithful to him. And she was so faithful that because she knew her husband's desire, she was always trying to fulfill it. So her husband, although he was a leper, he desired to enjoy a particular prostitute. So this chaste wife put herself in the service of this prostitute and served the prostitute for a long time until finally the prostitute requested her, "How can I repay you for this?" And then she explained that my husband has this desire to enjoy with you. So the prostitute agreed to satisfy her husband. So when she then told her husband that I have arranged for you to be able to be with this prostitute, and she began to take her husband to the prostitute, then her husband suddenly became very much ashamed and realized how chaste and faithful my wife is. So on his way home, he was passing by one great rishi, and by mistake he rubbed against him. And for this, he was cursed that by the time the sun rises, you will die. So the wife was so faithful that she determined herself to satisfy all of the demigods in such a way as to prevent the rising of the sun. And her prayers were so intense that gradually Brahma and Vishnu and Shiva all gave her the benediction to restore her husband's health and bring him back to life. And that's actually what happened. So by the grace of this woman, who was so selfless in her devotion, she brought all good fortune upon her husband. So this example is given in the Puranas, not simply to show how one has to devote oneself to one's husband, but to show how one has to be selfless in the mood of service. But this woman didn't consider, this is my husband, he's meant for my enjoyment. She was thinking, what is his happiness? She was always thinking, what is his happiness? So our mood has to be like that. We have to be thinking, what is Krishna's happiness? This is Krishna consciousness. If we only think, what is our husband's happiness? What is my wife's happiness? Providing that the husband and wife are not pure, then that will not help us. The real point is, what is Krishna's happiness? Just like in Vrindavan, the husbands and wives, no doubt, they were taking care of each other and looking to each other's needs. But because Krishna was personally living in Vrindavan, everyone in Vrindavan was thinking primarily of Krishna. So we are living in Vrindavan. This Kalachanji Dham is like Vrindavan, and Krishna is living amongst us. Therefore, all of the residents of here, of Vrindavan, they must always be thinking, what does Krishna need? What will make Krishna happy? This is Krishna consciousness. When this type of consciousness is there, that place is the spiritual world. So our movement is so nice that it is a preaching movement, because it means that there is a great struggle to put Krishna in the center. If we were to give up our preaching work and just take up this Varna Ashram business, then it would be very difficult to keep Krishna in the center, because suddenly, instead of Krishna being at the center, we would have all of our mundane material desires at the center. Oh, now I will get a nice house, I will have a nice wife, I will have nice family, I will get a good car, on and on, and I will give some percentage to Krishna, because of course I know he is God, and if I don't, then everything will be lost. But that is very different than the preaching mission of Krishna consciousness, because in the preaching mission of Krishna consciousness, it requires great sacrifice to preach. Preaching means that you have to upset the status quo. Preaching means that you have to declare war on Maya. That means you have to upset the status quo. The status quo is that Maya has her domain here, and you're allowed a very small portion, and that's all. But preaching of Krishna consciousness means, no, this is actually the kingdom of Krishna, and you have unfairly usurped it. Therefore, now it is our duty to reclaim the property of God. That means you're trying to create a revolution. You're trying to create a disturbance in the status quo. That is what preaching Krishna consciousness means. So in order to do that, it requires a great sacrifice. And this is the way in which we learn to become selfless in service. Because this specific sacrifice where Krishna is standing and demanding, serve me, requires that we become like that woman who put aside her material desires and considered, what does my husband want? So in order to preach the mission of Krishna consciousness, a devotee has to put aside to some degree, as far as he is able to surrender, his own personal desires and consider, what is the desire of Krishna? So in this regard, I want to have Burijan read one very nice little booklet which was written by one of the Gurukul children in Gita Nagari. And I think that you will all appreciate how nicely she has written.
This book is dedicated to all the Vaishnavas who go on Sankirtan. I'm writing books in a simple way as a Gurukul student for the purpose of preaching. I'm trying to follow in Srila Gurupada's footsteps by writing lots of books just as he did. The difference is that he is a pure devotee and I am just an aspiring devotee. I'm just a neophyte and this is just a small offering to the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. One day, on September 6th at 8 o'clock p.m., I returned to Gita Nagari after 4 days of separation from the Holy Dham. The ride took about 6 hours from Mother Damayanti's house to the farm's effulgent sign at the entrance. When we got on the farm, we went straight to Bhubrit's office to deliver $900 that the great Vaishnavas had collected on Sankirtan. This money was collected on the Labor Day weekend. All the commies were not working, so it was a good opportunity to preach to them. We preached to those who were interested, and we asked for donations. To get their attention, we pinned little United States flags on them and stuck stickers on their shirts and pants. We wanted to benefit the commies by giving the money to Bhubrit, who used the money in Krishna's service. Bhubrit happened to be at the board meeting, so we, the Sankirtan mothers and I, went down to Paramananda's house. When we got to the front of his house, Mother Satyabhama, with a big smile from ear to ear, greeted us. She took the money into Bhubrit, and as she was closing the door, someone said, "Here's the lost treasure." From that day, I could understand how important Sankirtan was. I could understand that the farm needed money to pay its debts, and now we needed money immediately. We could not drive the tractor because we owed the gas company money and they couldn't sell us any gas. We could not use the telephone because we did not pay the telephone bill. We had to pay the bill soon to keep the farm functioning as an example to the world of a Krishna conscious community whose members are cooperating because they're establishing Krishna as the center of their lives. Sankirtan was a good way to get money for the farm and help it remain a Krishna conscious community. This is what I could understand.
So this nice story, true story, related by this young Gurukul girl, shows how one can be in such a consciousness of yoga all of the time. In other words, Krishna, Radha Damodar, are very much at the center of that Gita Nagari community. So much so that even the little children are meditating on practical service to Krishna. Just as in Vrindavan, when something awful was about to befall the residents, everyone would take shelter of Krishna. So similarly, when there are emergencies like this, you can see that all the residents of that community, they all gather together to think, now how can we serve Krishna? Although this girl is very young, she is concerned very much for the service of Krishna. It is not like in the ordinary material world where the parents try to hide the facts of life from their children, where the children are simply interested in baseball and television. This little girl, although she is only 10 or 11 years old, she's doing her part to serve Krishna. She's Krishna conscious already. We see also here in our community that our mothers, they are taking the responsibility for saving the situation sometimes financially, because to push on the Krishna consciousness movement in a missionary mood requires a great deal of money. If we were simply interested in Varnashram, then we could very conveniently, just like the Christians, build a little church at the center of our community, and everybody could give their 10% and come once a week and do a little bit of praying. But because we are going to change the world, so we have to give much more than 10%, because it is not possible to be missionaries on the platform of 10%. Therefore, it requires sometimes that the residents of our devotional communities, they make sacrifice. That is required for missionary work. If one cannot perform missionary work, then that's all right. There's no obligation like that. But we have to understand that to preach and spread Krishna consciousness very, very widely, that requires great sacrifice. Just like to spread Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada had to sacrifice his family. He sacrificed his family. It's not only that he did it because he couldn't stand living at home. He couldn't stand it because he felt that the mission of his Guru Maharaj was burning in his heart. That is what was disturbing Prabhupada, not his wife's tea drinking. His wife's tea drinking was a disturbance to his Guru Maharaj's mission. So the thing that was burning in his heart was how to fulfill the order of his Guru Maharaj. And that is to deliver Krishna consciousness to the whole world. So when one becomes loving, in love with his spiritual master, so that his spiritual master's order becomes his life and soul, then he gets the strength to overcome his own personal desires. And he performs Sankirtan Jagya. Jagya means sacrifice. He sacrifices his own personal sense gratification to fulfill the will of Krishna. So you can see that these little children, they're all concerned. Oh, how will we be able to run the tractor? How will we be able to make telephone calls? Because they're seeing the tractor has to run to plow the fields so that we can show a nice Krishna-conscious community is productive. We have to make telephone calls to talk with each other, to talk to different temples, to the Sankirtan devotees. All of these different services require funding. So this little girl thought, well, yes, I will go out. And she was so enlivened that we have brought back the treasure. So our children, they're also learning this platform of surrender from a very young age. Sometimes the karmis challenge that, well, don't you think that this is unfair, forcing your children into this situation? But they are also forcing their children by sticking a television in their home and watching and letting the children watch the television. That is also forcing, because a child cannot be blamed. A child's senses are naturally uncontrolled. So whatever facility is given to a child for sense gratification, naturally the child is going to take such an advantage. So we're not doing that. But instead we're giving the child a different opportunity to fix his or her senses on the service of the Lord. So this little girl, she had such a nice consciousness like this, that I also want to help the situation. So just like here, our Sankirtan mothers, they went out. Their husbands were without their service. And they were without the normal association of their husbands, which every woman wants. And the children also, some of them had to even come out of the nursery or their schooling. And they had to undergo so many austerities also. It was very scary and fearful for some of them, away from the temple. But they did this as a sacrifice for Krishna. Now, don't you think that Krishna will reciprocate and bless them with Krishna bhakti? That's the reward for this. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. This is Krishna's promise. Ye yatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajami aham. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So the result of such sacrifice is that you get love of God. And that is the whole goal of human life. Love of God. That is the perfection of human life. That is why we have taken our birth as human beings. So we should all learn from this nice young girl. She's just like a guru. Just like her guru, she's also becoming guru. Even at a young age, by her nice writing and her good Krishna conscious activity, she's teaching everybody how to do their duty. You have to understand how to do your duty. There are two types of duty, worldly duties and otherworldly duties. So you have to try to coordinate the two. This requires the expert guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. to teach you how to fulfill your responsibilities within this world and at the same time to make progress back to home, back to Godhead. Are there any questions? Yes. Love for Krishna means to love Krishna. What is your question exactly? Because I know that you know this. Oh, yes. Krishna gives you that love. In other words, yes, Krishna shows you, he shows you his mercy by allowing you to love him and serve him. Therefore we pray, O Lord, please allow me to engage in your service. So the way that Krishna does this is through the via media of the spiritual master. This is the method. When one learns to serve Krishna, how do we learn to serve Krishna? Through our spiritual master. Without the father, how can the son progress? How can a child progress without the help of his parents? Similarly, how can one progress without the help and guidance of the spiritual master? So the spiritual master teaches one how to serve Krishna nicely. And when that service, the more the service becomes perfect, the more Krishna allows you to develop love for him. Actually, the love is already there, but it becomes uncovered and exposed and revealed and fanned. The spark of love of God is present within each one of us. It simply has to be brought out. So the method for bringing it out is service to Krishna. Real service, or loving service, begins with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. That will evoke our loving feelings. Another question? Yes. Yes, because Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. Buddhi yoga. This means connection with Krishna through intelligence. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I give them the intelligence by which to approach me. So intelligence means practical application. How to practically apply the teachings. That is called intelligence. So the more you surrender and serve Krishna, the more he blesses you with this buddhi yoga, this type of intelligence. Another question? Yes, they're following Krishna's path also. There's nothing but the path of God. Is there anything besides God and his energy? Some paths are longer, that's all. Some are shorter. The materialists are following a very long route with a lot of side, you know, places to visit called the hellish planets. Says, I can get to New York by going west. There's a way. But it's a long way around. I can touch my nose this way, or I can touch my nose this way. It's easier to go this way. So, chanting Hare Krishna is direct touching the nose. Any other questions? No. Okay, Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.